Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Rabona Podcast. I'm Musa Okwonga. This is the first podcast of 2019, joined again by the wonderful Michael De Silva and Ryan Hun. How's it going, gentlemen?
It's going well. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
We're going to be discussing where teams need to strengthen. Where do we go from here?
With resolutions.
That's right. January resolutions for leading teams around Europe. So let's kick off. Who's made the most impressive additions so far? We've got Rabiot going to Barcelona by the looks of things.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Pulisic, of course, going to Chelsea. Big money. I wanted to talk about that one because I think it's a lot of money to spend on a guy who hasn't been performing for much of the last calendar year. They're paying for potential there, Chelsea, clearly. But I just wonder whether they have some idea that Hazard is like on his way out in the summer and they're trying to beef up their options.
But Pulisic could play as an eight. And that's the thing about, he's amazing because he can play further ahead, but he can also play as a deeper line playmaker.
Yeah.
And he's the kind of midfielder that Chelsea don't quite have. If you think about it, he kind of bridges the gap between a kind of Jorginho and a more attacking player, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think if he's signed as anything other than a wide player, then it's a mistake because he's not in Hazard's class. Not many players are.
Right.
But if he's being signed as some kind of replacement for Hazard long term, I think they're barking up the wrong tree.
The thing about Sarri is he's so good at redeveloping players. So the N'Golo Kante experiment seems to be bearing fruit now.
Yeah.
I just wonder if he's the kind of coach who can bring out elements, qualities that we haven't so far seen in Pulisic.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you saw a couple of seasons ago when he first started playing regularly for Dortmund, how exciting a player he was. And that seems to have been, you know, stifled a little bit by the development of Sancho, who's been stealing minutes off him, really.
Sancho Corner
getting early. But there's definitely an amazing player in there, I think. And I think that actually somewhere like Chelsea, if he was going to move to the Premier League, it's probably a decent move for him because I think he will play.
Mm. Right.
I'm not sure if he would at any other of the top four so much. I don't think he'd probably play at United.
Mm.
I don't think he'd probably play at City.
And there's talk of Liverpool going in for him, given the Klopp connection.
But I just don't see him starting regularly for Liverpool.
I think he would start for United for sure.
Sorry, I said top four.
Oh, sorry. Wow, so we're doing that. That's what we're... Because we didn't have this sort of partisan mentality last year. So
I'm really sorry.
No, really sorry. Don't listen.
I did mention United. That is my bad.
The horse has bolted.
Oh, no.
So that's interesting. Sorry.
Zidane comes in at United next season, I'm sure he would have been fine.
I'm sorry to call you up on this. I'm sorry, listeners. We didn't have that degree of aggression. We had a sort of a non-aggression pact.
That wasn't aggression.
It's gone out. Well, raised voices.
Come on, you kind of left that was an open goal. You laid it on a plate for me.
Yeah, he's certainly talking facts here.
Oh, okay.
Do you know what?
He's doubled down on that. That's really mean.
Wow. Do you know what? Let's listen. As Michelle Obama said, when they go low, we go high.
We've just lost all our subscribers, now, I think.
When I first saw Pulisic play, I think it was against Real in a group game of the UEFA Champions League. And what struck me there was actually his decision making in traffic, like, you know, in the mix of the pitch, and like what they call in Barcelona the interior, the inside player. So I thought to myself, this is a guy who can control the tempo of a game at high speed when his team is chasing from the middle of the pitch. And almost like a kind of like what Ross Barkley should be.
He has a very sharp mind, like with the ball at his feet. There's no doubt about that. And he's got all of the tools, like, you know, speed, awareness. He's a very exciting player. And as I say, they've paid for that potential. And hopefully Sarri's the guy that can unlock it. My concern with him is the sense of apathy, almost. Like the ease with which he's just kind of accepted that he's no longer the first choice.
Right.
And that Sancho is just the guy now. And that's it. Like, I would have wanted to see Pulisic fight a lot harder for his place. And there's definitely space in that team for the both of them. I know Royce comes into it and Alcacer has scored lots of goals as well. But if I was a Chelsea fan, I'd be concerned at that mental fragility. And I'd like to see a bit more. I wanted to see a bit more fight from Pulisic, because as someone who has a bit of a soft spot for Dortmund, I wanted to see them move forward with Royce, Alcacer, Sancho and Pulisic. I think those four have the potential to be devastating. And to see Pulisic on the bench for so long this season and the end of last, it's a bit concerning.
Is that down to Pulisic though, or is that basically Dortmund getting an offer and making a call? Because I suppose that if they've agreed for him to go, it's not really
deal for Dortmund.
Yeah, like I don't think they would say, listen, do you want to go?
I think it's
when that money's on the table, they're like, right, we've accepted it. And then if your club has accepted an offer for you, then you're like, well, I'm going to go. I'm not getting minutes.
Absolutely. It's a great deal for Dortmund. It's a good deal for Pulisic. I just think Chelsea, of the three parties involved, may not have done the best out of it.
This is why, like you said before, about wondering whether they have got wind of a big sale coming up for them, because they've been really good at selling in the last few years, Chelsea. They've completely, you know, switched their model, really.
Mm, absolutely.
You know, they've sold especially well to China. So, I wonder if maybe they have an idea that Hazard might go.
Yeah. Right.
I think if he is going to go, I mean, this isn't really on the running order or whatever, but I think if he is going to go, I think this season or the end of this season is probably the optimal point for him to go. Mm.
And for Madrid, actually.
And for Real.
They really need him.
Maybe
really
it's 27, 28 now. I think if he is going to go and have a real impact at somewhere like Real, especially with his kind of skill set, I think he needs to go soon.
And anyone that saw Real losing to Sociedad, I mean, that team is not a team with ideas and attack. They don't have attacking complexity, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, we can get onto that a little bit if you want. The problem, I think, at the moment is, even against Sociedad yesterday, they left Isco on the bench. Solari's not been playing Isco a lot. And it's causing a lot, I think, of confusion in Madrid. They've obviously lost a massive star since Cristiano Ronaldo's gone, and they've also lost a hell of a lot of goals.
Mm. Right.
You know, if you think of someone in Europe who would be potentially available,
Hazard's the
very
guy,
creative,
right?
Yeah. And a goal scorer, it's him, really.
Yeah.
It's a funny thing with Real, because Zidane was there and his job was kind of to do almost like a Del Bosque, manage this incredible talent in the squad. But now that Ronaldo's left and the team is no longer configured around him, you've got this strange situation where players are now playing below their best, and Solari is not a great tactician, and he's being exposed, right, routinely being exposed. Like, he's not a great coach, and this is a challenge for Real as well in relation to who they hire next.
I think when you have a team like Real, the balance of that squad meant that Zidane was the perfect guy for that job, because you just needed, especially after the managers they had had before Zidane, you know, you just needed someone to come in who, the players would listen to, massively respect. You know, I mean, who wouldn't listen to what Zinedine Zidane has to say if you're a current player?
Right.
But unfortunately, I think a lot of that revolved around or relied upon having players like Ronaldo in that squad. If you've taken someone like Cristiano Ronaldo out, you then need someone to come in with real ideas and a different kind of manager to Zidane to then bring the whole level of the squad up, because they've kind of been relying on how good they are.
Right.
You know? I mean, there's no doubt about it at the moment. They're coasting. They're fifth now. You know, Alaves have gone above them in the table into the Champions League spot. And this is deep into the season. This isn't September.
There's parallels there between Real Madrid and Manchester United though, right? In many respects, that they've kind of turned to a former player to, you know, instills some kind of reminder of what the club is about. And both clubs are now looking forward to next season. It's almost like this season is kind of a writer.
I mean, I would be very surprised if Solari's in charge next season. I think the only reason he's in charge now is because they got to the end of the 14-day deadline in Madrid where they had to confirm as a permanent manager. They have a rule in La Liga that any manager that's there that longer than that has to be a permanent manager.
Yeah.
So I can't see that being a long-term thing.
I think when we're talking about, you know, more generally strengthening a squad, and that includes replacing players, the biggest mistake you can make when you're getting rid of an iconic player is to try and replace them. You have to reconfigure the entire attack or midfield. So, you know, when Roy Keane left, Manchester United bought Michael Carrick, and some of the responsibilities that Keane had were shared out among other people. And I think that's a real problem when people, I mean, unless you're Juventus and you're getting rid of Baggio because you've got Del Piero waiting. This is almost unprecedented in world history to have a footballer who is perfectly suited to the role.
Yeah.
That succeed, you know, Baggio, I can't think of a better fit than Del Piero succeeding Baggio. And I think, generally speaking, when you're replacing a player of continuous quality, you know, anyone else, like Ronaldo, you've got to just divide up the jobs. And the challenge that Real have is Bale does not have, he's a best supporting actor, but he's not necessarily the lead of that attack. Benzema's finishing is coming under the spotlight now, and it was horrible against Sociedad. And Benzema, I think, has always had that thing where he's wonderful as a kind of, in his approach play, as a support striker, but he's not the person you want as your main striker. There's a reason why Benzema's been there so long and never been the main nine at Real. I mean, Higuain was there. And does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. Should we move from Real Madrid to Barcelona and talk about a player that you mentioned at the start, Rabiot?
Yeah, absolutely.
He's made a move from PSG.
Has that been confirmed now? Or is it basically pretty much
confirmed for the summer, I believe?
Right. What do you make of that?
Interesting one. A little disappointed. I was hoping that he would look at North London as an option.
Yeah, I would have loved him at Arsenal.
I mean, there's no doubt he's a very good player. He's not necessarily the player that I expected Barca to sign, but I think he could be Barca need a player like him who can control midfield.
Right.
They've obviously been struggling a little bit in that area to some extent in replacing Xavi and Iniesta. I think Rakitic is painfully underappreciated.
Right, right.
But then you've got a guy like Rabiot who I think can really offer Barca something. So I think it's an interesting signing. I don't know how much they paid for him, though.
It's not a lot. I will find out 1 second.
It's weird because they were looking for Frankie de Jong, weren't they? But then what's happened with that? Like, he's gone elsewhere. He's being lined up by somebody else, isn't he, Frankie de Jong?
Yeah, he hasn't moved yet, but he's...
But someone else is ahead, which is strange because he was something where, if you look at the sort of Barcelona fans on sort of social media and the bloggers and the podcasts, Frankie de Jong was the guy they wanted.
Yeah.
And I look at someone like Rabiot and I just think to myself, I'm slightly underwhelmed by it.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why. There's two reasons behind that. The first thing is that his form has kind of stagnated a bit.
Mm.
And the other thing he's a very good player, Rabiot. He's kind of, I think, like a sort of understudy to Rakitic in terms of the amount of work he'll do. You've got Arthur, who's the kind of chubby light who's going to sew together the midfield. And Rabiot is more of a kind of like elite water carrier who can do a bit of everything. He's basically kind of 7.5, 8 out of 10 and everything. Like a Thiago at Chelsea. Do you remember like Thiago back in the day?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or like a Marquisio type player.
Yeah. So I guess the concern is he going to raise the level of Barca?
Right, that's how the other reason I've got concern is because Valverde might be out the door in summer because the intimations he's making, it sounds like he might be coming to the end of his time there. So do you really want a player like Rabiot and you're not sure who's going to develop him coming in? You know, if you're going to have a manager leaving in the summer, shouldn't you buy a midfielder who's like more fully formed? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a bit of a different tack though, because they spent quite a lot of money on midfielders in the summer, just gone. And so Rabiot is joining on a free transfer, but for a signing on fee of €10 million.
Right.
And he is only 23.
That's a good amount.
I mean, I remember him when he played against Chelsea a couple of years ago in the Champions League, and he completely dominated midfield.
Right.
And I've been quite surprised how his stock has kind of fallen over the last couple of years, actually, because when he was 19, 20, he looked like he was going to be one of the best midfielders in Europe.
Yeah. Right.
And I'm wondering whether maybe a change of scenery might unlock that for him. I think he's someone who could actually play instead of Busquets at Barca as well, because Busquets hasn't been in the greatest form of his life this season.
No.
By any means.
No.
There's sometimes that is the problem with Barca's midfield, is they have no direct real replacement for Busquets. And I think in La Liga, in that setup, I think Rabiot could
quite easily
play that.
The only weird thing about that is that and that's a very interesting analysis, and I've heard, I think, Kevin Williams on Twitter is referring to something similar. The only thing that's slightly concerns about that is you've got PSG playing this 4-2-3-1. You've got Verratti and Marquinhos at the base of midfield. Now, Marquinhos is basically playing ahead of Rabiot in that kind of defensive midfield position, which implies that defensively Rabiot isn't up to that scratch. And that's the only concern I have about that, because I've heard people saying like Rabiot can hold midfield, but maybe in a midfield three where you've got this brief where you can do a bit of attacking, a bit of defending, that's a better fit for him, I don't know.
It's an important move for Rabiot, though, because he was part of the Man City Academy, wasn't he? And then he moved from City to PSG, I believe. I don't think there was anyone in between.
It's funny because he was excellent against PSG, against City, sorry, in the Champions League.
Yeah.
He was one of the standout players. Yeah. And they faced him a couple of years ago.
Yeah. So he's got, you know, he's been at...
Good shout, yeah.
He's been at a couple of big clubs and, you know, hasn't made it at various levels. And he's, how old did you say? 23. So it's a... probably the most important move he's going
to
make.
It's a Daniel Sturridge thing, isn't it? How Daniel Sturridge went to, like, you know, like Sturridge is like he's always the head of his academy, but never quite found his sort of natural place.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like De Jong is going to go to PSG, which is why they've probably cleared space.
Oh, right. I see.
Personally, I would not like to see that. I'm a big fan of De Jong, and I think it's a real shame that someone like him and De Ligt will potentially go to someone like PSG now.
Right.
I'd really love to see them make a different move. It's not a move you really see that much anymore. Mm. But I mean, I would quite like to see them at an, I'm not sure what the club would be, but not quite a PSG or Real Madrid
yet. I know that Tottenham
are
looking at De Ligt, actually, because Alderweireld has extended his, or Tottenham have extended his contract for another year, but that's only
to sell him, right?
To sell him, yeah. It's going to trigger a £25 million release clause. Mm. So Alderweireld would leave Spurs this season or this year, this calendar year.
I think De Ligt out of the two of them is the one that would potentially go to a Spurs or an Arsenal or even maybe Germany.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Right. I think De Jong has got almost too much hype about him and he's so good in midfield that I think he's the one who, if one of them was going to go for mega money, I think it would be De Jong. I think out of the two of them, as much as I love Frankie De Jong, I think De Ligt is would be an incredible signing for someone like...
De Ligt is legit.
Or United.
Spurs, you know, losing Alderweireld, arguably their best centre-back.
Right.
You know, I mean, I wouldn't even dream of sticking Arsenal in the conversation for that, but I would love to see someone like De Ligt at Arsenal. You know, and then it's... Maybe we could get onto Premier League stuff, but that's definitely an area where Arsenal are crying out for a signing.
I could see Alderweireld going to Manchester United, actually.
He wanted to go a couple of years ago,
He did. And it never... I think it was even last summer. Spurs wanted to keep hold of him, but
Will that be with Poch?
Well, that's another chance. Story altogether.
Yeah, that's another podcast. But there's a development with Juan Foyt as well that is more rapid than I think even Pochettino realised. So I think Spurs are more willing to part with Alderweireld. And 25 million, I mean, it's not a great amount, but
he's 31 though, right?
He's getting on, yeah. So
I mean, it's rare that defenders over 30 go for mega money, right?
Right, yeah. Right.
Actually, I wanted to ask you about Foyt because he's shown some really, really good signs, but also he's had a couple of quite high-profile games where he's really struggled.
Yeah.
Do you think he's going to really develop into a mainstay at Spurs?
Yeah, there's high hopes for him at Tottenham, and I think rightly so. I mean, I've seen quite a lot of him over the last few weeks, and one of the really good things about Pochettino is that he puts his faith in young players regardless of the mistakes they may make. And he's done that with Kyle Walker-Peters, and he's doing that with Foyt. The first game that Tottenham played at Wolves, Foyt made a couple of pretty bad errors, gave away a penalty. One of them was actually Trippier's fault that he was trying to cover for him. But yeah, Foyt has made some errors, but he's bounced back, and there's a lot of potential there. And against Tranmere in the FA Cup a few days ago, okay, with the greatest respect, it's Tranmere, but he was absolutely dominating centre-back. So I think there's a lot to come from Foyt. And Spurs are doing this, you know, they're bringing through a lot of young players, and there's a lot being made about Tottenham not signing players and not spending too much. And there is something to be said for that. But, you know, you look at Gazzaniga, the goalkeeper, he's risen above Michel Vorm as the understudy for Lloris. And to be honest, I don't think it's going to be too long until Gazzaniga replaces Lloris. And he is from Murphy, the same town as Pochettino in Argentina.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's like, they have a family connection.
Ah.
So that's how he was signed.
Nepotism.
Foyt,
I love that.
Foyt is also Argentine, and Pochettino was alerted to him by some scouts and friends. There's also guys like Oliver Skipp who are coming through, 18 years old.
midfield.
Played in defensive midfield, but played so many forward passes in that FA Cup game against Tranmere. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, I think there's Spurs are kind of turning to their academy in a way that I haven't seen from many clubs, maybe since Manchester United in the 90s.
It's Spurs Project Youth.
It's like really
for
exciting.
New stadium.
Really
yeah. And like, and yeah. You know, I mean, to be honest though, I think that the core crop of youngsters coming through at Spurs is a lot stronger than it was when
from a footballing point of view. This is the thing, from a footballing point of view, I would like to see Pochettino stay at Spurs. Mm-hmm. I want to see him develop those players. And I say that, you know, forget my own affiliations with clubs. Mm. I just love to see that happening. And you contrast that with Manchester City, who may be releasing Brahim Diaz to Real Madrid. And Brahim Diaz was a player that Guardiola absolutely raved about. Yeah. And my concern there is because I read a piece about this and it was City saying, well, yeah, okay, they got Sancho wrong, but, you know, everyone else they're happy to have got rid of. And I'm like, I think that's kind of PR because how could you be happy to have released Sancho? How could you really realistically, even as good as Riyad Mahrez has been, Sancho has been extraordinary at the highest level and, you know, has dismantled some of the best defences across Europe.
Absolutely.
Dismantled them.
As soon as City signed Mahrez, you knew Diaz was going to go. Mm. And also it completely put to bed any questions about Sancho moving to Dortmund because he would just never, ever get anywhere near that squad.
Yeah.
And look at where he is now. He's ahead of a lot of senior England wide players as well.
Sancho's value right now, if Pulisic is worth 64, Sancho's worth 128.
And you add the English premium on top as well. If English clubs want to sign him.
Put it this way, if you put Mahrez at Dortmund, I'm not sure Mahrez has that season. Like, if you look at what Sancho has done, and we talk about this guy a lot, but to score a winning goal against Schalke in Schalke in the last, 10-12 minutes of a game like that.
Given the week he had
Honestly, this player is on
this
another level.
Clutch.
He is a supreme attacking talent, not young attacking talent. He's a supreme attacking talent.
Yeah.
And the concern I have with City is, you know, the talk about giving youth a chance. I know that Phil Foden's played in midfield. It reveals a slight insecurity because Brahim Diaz is not the kind of player that you get rid of. That is he is a generational talent.
Well, this is, I think, the problem that you're seeing now at the top end of the Premier League in terms of the real impact of the increase in revenue.
Right.
And you are seeing that the margins are so minutely small compared to what they used to be.
Right.
You could take a chance one season by selling a senior winger and replacing them with a youngster.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to bring it back to Arsenal, but when Arsenal were at their peak under Arsene Wenger, they sold Patrick Vieira and built the team around Cesc Fabregas, who was a kid.
Yeah,
I just couldn't see a Premier League side doing that nowadays. That who were competing for the championship because it's just the margins are that small.
We've seen this before. This reminds me of Milan in the 90s, mid-90s, when they bought all those. I mean, Ajax win the Champions League, and Milan and Barca just like scoop up that squad and they put Davids and Kluivert on the bench for like, Kluivert's won a Champions League and it's actually, it's wild if you think about it now.
Except for Seedorf, who went to Sampdoria.
Well, this was
Moussa's favourite ever transfer. Yeah,
I just love it because it's so intelligent.
You've not mentioned it today. I'm glad we got that mentioned.
Seedorf to Sampdoria. Like that is just, when you see a move like that, you're like, that is a chess move right there.
Let's have a quick break, let Moussa calm down after all that Sampdoria and Seedorf talk.
So, just getting back from the break, I want to quickly talk about Pochettino. you're laughing at me again. Everyone's laughing at me this week. Viewers, listen, do you know what?
Laughing with you.
Yeah, with you.
Well, we can't tell. We'll tell.
I can tell. We'll see.
So, Pochettino, the job he's doing at Spurs, reminds me of, well, not that I was that sentient back then, but Bobby Robson at Ipswich. Very innovative, doing incredible work, both in, you know, the English first division, but also in Europe, with a squad really that was recruited not that high a cost, and just getting the best out of players under his watch. People like John Walk, for example.
Yeah.
And the reason I want to see Pochettino stay there, and I keep hammering this home, is because we just don't get to see managers reach their peak at clubs, which are, it's almost like, you know, I suppose Simeone at Atletico Madrid. They've got a fair bit of money at Atletico, but compared to their rivals, not that much. I mean, they've got a third the wage bill of Barca. And it's just something really exciting about watching someone like Pochettino build up a great institution like Spurs into the club they should be.
There's a great Bobby Robson documentary on Netflix, by the way.
I fully recommend that.
Yeah.
But be prepared because I I don't think I've cried that much in a long time.
Yeah,
honestly.
It's quite emotional.
I think if you know the story as well and you know it's coming, but yeah, Bobby Robson, More Than a Manager. It's on Netflix now.
He's a very special human being, Bobby Robson.
But I think you're right. Like how Pochettino develops players, it's what a coach should be, you know?
Right,
what a top-class coach should be, making good players great, and in some cases, making bad players good.
Yeah. The thing about, sorry to jump in, but like the thing about Pochettino that makes me hope that he stays there is that I think now everything in top-end football is so accelerated that you rarely see players or managers complete a cycle.
Right.
You know, and for me, this cycle for Pochettino and Spurs is nowhere near complete yet.
Yeah.
Right.
And they've got, you know, as an Arsenal fan, it kind of pains me to say this, but as a neutral, you look at Spurs and there is definitely something going on there in terms of like something special or something you can potentially see happening. So I think that it would just be good to see as a football fan Pochettino continue that into the new stadium for at least a few more years to see what he can turn that into, you know. And it might go completely wrong, you never know, because it is a hard transition to make, and especially now with the stadium costing so much money. But it would be a shame to not ever find out what that kind of story ends like.
It's frustrating also for people to constantly say, well, he's not going to be a success until he wins a trophy. Like, is a League Cup win going to suddenly make him a great... We already know he's a great coach. Right. Like, he's already working wonders. As a Spurs fan, I would like to... It would be nice to celebrate an FA Cup or something, but that doesn't define him, you know?
No.
Yeah, I think the times have changed and it's also relative to whatever club you support. So say, for example, if you're a Southampton fan, winning an FA Cup or a League Cup would be something they would genuinely want because it's not going to affect their Premier League campaign.
Yeah.
You know, but for Spurs, going deep in the FA Cup or the League Cup could... You know, they've got this two-legged semi-final coming up for the League Cup, which could potentially come at a really bad time for them.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I think the same thing happens with Klopp. The talk about but he hasn't won any trophies and whatever.
Right.
It's like it's a different thing. It's a different thing now.
And the real question, actually, with all these people go, oh, Klopp hasn't won, Pochettino hasn't won. You say to any of these people, would you like him to manage your club?
Yeah.
And they would they would yank off any body part of yours that was closest. They would, let's just not even get into it's just talk. It's just But before I forget, I want to talk about the potential transfer of Aaron Ramsey to Juventus. Mm-hmm. And I like that for so many reasons. It's just such a cool move.
Yeah.
Because what I love about it for Ramsey is not that he needs the validation, but it's basically to everybody else, look, this guy's an elite player.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what I love about him is, again, we talked about Marquisio before, he just has that thing, Ramsey, where he's got the kind of the complete skill set for a midfielder.
Yeah.
And so you can slot him into that Juventus midfield alongside Pjanic, and it will just... You can just see it rolling on. So
is that going to be a midfield three of Pjanic, Matuidi and Ramsey?
Ooh.
You wouldn't want to face them in a bar fight.
You know what? Ramsey is handy as well. Like, everyone thinks he's a bit of a choir boy, but he decked Van Persie in the dressing room once when Van Persie was captain.
Did he really?
Yeah. And Ramsey was, I think, 20.
Wow. You know what it is? Ramsey's got a bit of the Andy Murray about him. You know, the kind of guy who, like, he's got this kind of like slightly sort of spiky, there's a lot going on up there, but he doesn't say that much. When he speaks, it's like...
And also, he's absolutely stacked. Like, if you see him play... He's hench.
But there's a rich heritage of Welsh players at Juventus as well, with John Charles, Ian Rush. It would be really nice to see Aaron Ramsey continue that.
Yeah,
and I think I think you're right about validation as well. Like, he doesn't need it, but we want to see it.
Yeah, you know? Because it's just like, it puts him on the map. And we know how good Ramsey is, but he could fit, it's to his credit, he could fit into any elite midfield. You could put him at Madrid now. God knows they need a player like that, actually, because they look a bit sluggish. Casemiro... They need to knit that midfield.
That's very true, actually.
I thought he would go there, actually. Yeah. I thought he would go to either Madrid or Barcelona. I thought, being mates with Gareth Bale, I think would have had a big thing about it. And I could have imagined them two both playing for Real. I mean, I wrote a piece for Rabona about this not too long ago, about when the news came out that his contract wasn't getting extended. And at the time, it was as bad business as it is to let a player like that go for free or to let his contract get to this situation. You could kind of understand the move. And I kind of stand by that. I think he's always said that he wanted to play abroad at some point in his career. He's 28 years old now. At the time, and even since then, it's clear that he doesn't quite seem to fit into what Emery wants a midfielder to be. And you've seen that with Mesut Ozil as well. He's not being used that high. Yeah. And I think, you know, there's a lot of rumours about Arsenal going after Ever Banega. and potentially Denis Suarez, two players who Emery has had and knows and trusts. So if Aaron Ramsey was going to leave Arsenal, you'd like to see, you know, a 50, 60 million pound fee for him or something like that.
Yeah.
But I think for both parties, maybe in terms of the actual, you take the financial out of it, I think you can understand how it kind of makes sense. I mean, he's never, ever been a consistent dominating performer for Arsenal. He had that brilliant season when in 2013-14. It was his best scoring season. You know, he scored the winner in the FA Cup final, which ended the trophy drought. He then scored another winner against Chelsea in the FA Cup final. He's always been super divisive, though. And I think that the reality is somewhere in the middle. He's a really brilliant player.
Right.
I wish he'd been more consistent.
I think every game he plays now for Arsenal, like against Blackpool the other day, West Ham at the weekend, is like, I don't know.
Everyone's all of a sudden going to be like, oh my God, Ramsey.
Every Arsenal fan seems to be letting every performance just like seep into their pores. I wanted to ask you about what the plan is for Arsenal under Emery, because he's making some big calls. You know, if he's letting Ramsey go, he's not playing Ozil. Lacazette now isn't starting so often.
I think the Lacazette thing is a little bit easier to explain, is that Arsenal don't have numbers up front as well. And I think that the worst thing that could happen now is either Lacazette or Aubameyang getting injured.
Yeah.
Because Arsenal, goal scoring wise, are fine. Yeah. I think they've scored the third most goals in the league or something. It's defensively that is really, really letting Arsenal down.
What do you think the plan is for the midfield, though? Because you've got Denis Suarez potentially coming in. You mentioned Benega there. Torreira's obviously formed a key part of midfield, and you've got Guendouzi as well. What kind of midfield do you think he's trying to build?
I think he's trying to build a three. So I think he's trying to have Torreira plus two. Mm. I think he'd like someone a little bit more dynamic than Xhaka. Mm. Although I think Xhaka gets a little bit more stick than he deserves. I think you've noticed when he's been moved at times to centre-back this season how much Arsenal's midfield has suffered. Mm. Him and Torreira have a pretty good partnership going. Mm. Guendouzi's still very raw. Yeah. I think he will be amazing, but he's still very, very raw. Yeah. And, you know, he was playing Ligue 2 not too long ago, and he's only 19 years old. I think the main thing about Arsenal at the moment is that their wage bill is huge. With the Ozil contract extension...
He's a top earner, right?
He is the highest earner. Also, they signed Aubameyang in January for, I think he's on 200 grand a week. Right. And they swapped Alexis for Mkhitaryan, but Alexis's contract was 130 grand a week. Mkhitaryan came in for 200 grand a week.
Oh my goodness.
Wow,
so,
really?
Yeah, so their wage bill hit 2 million for the first time ever, and they desperately need to offload wages.
Okay.
So I think that maybe people like Suarez and Benega wouldn't command as high wages as maybe a Ramsey contract extension would, which is potentially part of the reason behind it. I think that if maybe... The problem is, sorry to kind of go on too long about this, but I think the Ozil deal was done very much by Gazidis and then Gazidis left. Mm. I think that if it was fully controlled by Mislintat and Raul Sanyei and Hosfami, the main kind of three at Arsenal now, I would be very surprised if the same deal was offered. I actually think Ramsey would probably get offered
Where does Ozil go though? There's no natural place for him.
There's not.
At a top team, anywhere really, like when I say top team, like, you know, top three teams, any league in Europe.
I think depending on who Manchester United get as their new coach, Ozil could be an option for them.
I think too many people up front.
The thing about Ozil, it's a really curious situation because Arsenal are desperately lacking some creativity at the moment. Mm. And anyone who really understands football has never really questioned Ozil's ability, I don't think. I think that the problem with Ozil now is that tactics have changed to a point where you kind of need more. You look at Bernardo Silva as a prime example.
Right.
I think that you need so much more from your creative midfielders now. I think maybe if he had come to Arsenal when Emery was manager then, I think he may have developed a little bit more in that way. I think Wenger loved him so much. And it was, there's all of these things about him being the teacher's pet, getting extra days off, all this kind of thing. But people allowed him that because he was he was arguably the biggest signing that Arsenal made since Dennis Bergkamp in terms of stature at that time.
Yeah.
I think the problem is now that the conditions almost have to be too perfect for him to be 10 out of 10.
It's the Mario Götze problem. There's no natural place for a purely creative midfielder in most of these teams, unless you have flying wingers, two incredibly robust defence midfielders, and a number 10, like a kind of Van Nistelrooy or a Roy Mackay type figure I mentioned earlier, then you have Ozil to float in behind him.
But I actually think that Arsenal have played a system this season where you would see the best out of Ozil.
Yeah.
And it was actually that system against Spurs, a game that he didn't play in, but Emery made a tweak in the second half where he brought Aaron Ramsey on and played him behind Lacazette and Aubameyang. Mm. And Aubameyang and Lacazette basically pulled wider than you would expect centre forwards to do, which just freed up the middle for Ramsey to break. And that's where Ozil is his most dangerous, running through the middle of the pitch with the ball, you know, with two players like that around him. Yeah. So I do wonder if maybe there is a way to get him back in the side and get him firing, but he needs to get fit first, basically. Right.
Just move it on to another signing. Solanke has gone to Bournemouth.
Right.
For 17 million, I believe.
From Liverpool, right? Now.
Yeah. What do we think about that? Do you think it's a? Do we think he's got the perfect platform to fulfil his potential, or is he going to be another
Jordan Ibe?
I didn't want to say it.
Well, someone had to. Interesting, because Bournemouth is a very well coached club, but experiencing a strange period of flux at the moment, conceding a lot of goals, but also they need goals. I mean, they're scoring pretty freely as well, so I don't doubt that they're able to find a place for them in their kind of rotation.
Yeah,
and I think it's a nice club to be at. It's a great platform to build your career up. It's funny because he's the kind of player, if you look at someone like Wolves need a player like that. They need more goals. You know, all that Wolves are really lacking are a kind of goal scorer. So I wonder if other clubs are looking at someone like that now and going, oh, I wish we could have put in a bid for him, or because he's obviously got all the gift there is.
Yeah.
But there's also a wider point, which is that Liverpool need to kind of, you know, shed some players. And their model, actually, in terms of bringing in players and selling, is pretty good. Like, under the new owners, they've really got their business model together in terms of recruitment and selling. So, they're looking
good. It's a decent fee for him.
It's good for, for sure.
I mean, you see the fees linked with Hudson-Odoi from Chelsea to Bayern.
Yeah.
That's kind of the value that you would put on him, really, as well. But Chelsea seem to want 40 million for him, which is wild. And I would be very surprised if Bayern pay that, because it would be a transfer record for them. But yeah, going back to Solanke, I think there's something a little bit odd about Bournemouth. They're confusing me a bit. They definitely need to change some personnel. I think they definitely need to strengthen in midfield and in defence.
Yeah.
And I think that I don't think we'll really be able to see the true value of that Solanke signing until they do that.
Yeah, right? For sure.
Because they're just shipping so many goals. I think they've conceded 15 goals in the last four games. It's a tricky situation at Bournemouth for a club that size. You know, I think Eddie Howe's doing amazing work there.
He remains a fascinating manager, Eddie Howe, just very quickly, because he, again, what you wonder with something like that, where next, actually?
Hoffenheim. We've said it before.
Sorry. The hipster's choice.
Sorry, Michael, you have to say something.
No, I mean, I think
about to say Hoffenheim.
I think, but I don't want to say one thing about Howe and then think another for Pochettino. But there is going to come a time when he's going to need to make that step.
Is he going to have to win a trophy?
I'd like to see a big club take a. It's not even a gamble, because I think he's proved himself capable of making that next move. Yeah. But still, I just can't see a Manchester United signing him. But he is the kind of coach that I think could move United forward.
Yeah, I think if Howe was German and coaching in the Bundesliga at a club of similar level, he would have already been promoted up.
He would definitely be in the conversation for jobs like Dortmund.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that just the culture in the Premier League is very, very different. And I think that clubs are a lot more conservative to take that kind of leap on a manager. So I think he might have to go abroad next. Not have to, but I think it would be a really good move for him to do that.
I'd like to see him do it, whether he would or not.
Benfica. I want Guardiola to go to Roma and Eddie Howe to go to Benfica.
Yeah,
well, the Englishman abroad.
So yeah, I mean, Guardiola tends to stay at clubs for about three seasons. So perhaps a surprise or a shock move to Roma just from nowhere could actually be closer to the truth.
We can expect Champions League managers to honour their contracts. I mean, look at Mourinho. I mean, he signed an extension and that obviously...
That was clever. Mourinho, I hope he's all right. I hope he had a good Christmas.
But yeah, before we wrap up, I want to quickly mention Atletico Madrid, who, to my mind, are just the most fascinating club in Europe, because
you've got to have a thing for them, haven't you?
I really do. They fascinate me the more I think about them. And we're talking about strengthening. They're in a funny position because they're second in a Spanish league, and they're not really clicking. Like they're not scoring many goals. They got a 1-1 draw against Sevilla, like, you know, free kick from Griezmann. No one else has got more than, I think, two goals for them all season.
Not great to watch.
Thomas Lemar has not really integrated yet. He's got a tough brief. You've got Saul Niguez, who's playing left back a lot of the time this year. They're kind of an odd assortment.
Mm.
And, you know, Diego Costa's come back from injury. No one's sure how he's going to look. There is a team that actually has a lot more work to do than the league position appears. And they've still only lost one game all season. So they're a really interesting side, I think.
Their ceiling is quite a lot higher than perhaps we realise.
Yeah, they're letting a lot of talk about Felipe Luis and Godin leaving at the end of the season. It looks like Godin's going to Inter. So, you know, a couple of mainstays there at the back. But they've got, they've kind of been gradually transitioning to a different
whoever takes
four.
Over from them, from Simeone, has got to get a handle on things really quickly.
Mm.
Because the squad they have, the players they have, are really exciting. They've got a guy, Rodrigo, in midfield, who has been a revelation. So, yeah, I just think I'm just throwing them in because I think that we're talking about strengthening, and that is a club that I think has got really exciting potential.
Yeah.
And I actually mentioned this extensively. I was on La Liga TV. I don't know if I name dropped that before. Yeah, I don't know if I name dropped that.
Yeah, plug.
They gave a plug to Rabona as well. Shout out to La Liga TV. Thank you for having me in, Lee Roden. Thank you for getting me on there and talking Spanish football.
Before we go, this is the first podcast of 2019.
Right.
Had a little break.
Mm.
You're feeling recharged, guys? You're
feeling fresh.
I think we've all been ill over the Christmas break, right?
Yeah.
I feel like the Christmas break did for me what Solskjaer has done for Manchester United.
Well, it's all changed since we last podcasted.
Absolutely revigorated. I'm ready to go. I'm very excited. I've sent out more pictures.
That Man United swagger is back.
Yeah, I've sent out more pictures this week than I sent out the whole of last year.
Wow. See, I thought you said pictures then, and that was concerning me.
I've taken an absolute shellacking on this podcast. That's so good. My confidence is so robust.
It's mainly been from you to you.
That's true.
Hey, why change? Why change a good thing?
Good to see you again, guys.
But yeah, before we do go, if you are listening on iTunes, please give us a rating and a review. It really helps kind of bump up the podcast. Actually, December was our best month so far. You know, we had quite a good month for us, but we're still, people are listening. More people listened in December than any other month so far. That's good. But thanks to everyone who has supported the podcast so far. Please pass it on. And we're going to introduce some new stuff this year. A little bit of a rotational feature thing. Keep it a little bit fresh.
Just that.
If any listeners have any ideas for things they want to hear, things that we should be discussing, please comment and let's
know. And also we'll kind of, I think I'm going to pitch to set up an email so we can have a constant mailbag so people can get in touch instead of tweeting us.
Yeah.
But if you do have anything to say about the podcast, tweet us at Rabonamag or What's Moose's at Okwonga.
That's me.
Michael at MJ Da Silva.
Yep.
And at Bad Goal Rai Rai.
Yeah, letting the side down there with that terrible.
All good. Well, so thank you once again for joining us. Michael, it's been a pleasure having you back. And Ryan as well. And our audience, you've been outstanding. So please continue supporting. It's always great to have you with us. And yes, you can find us on all social media handles at Rabonamag. Take care till the next time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.